Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to St. Mark's Lutheran Church. For those of you who are guests here, my name is Jonald Stray. I am one of the two pastors that serves here at St. Mark's Lutheran Church. This is my assistant, Kurt. The third of my four children who always wants to be with Daddy, and I hope might be a pastor and or organist someday. We welcome you to our third annual pipe organ recital today. If you have not done so already, please head to the back, and on the bookshelves you will find a copy of today's program. A couple of notes on our recital today. Some of you perhaps are frequent recitals such as these. For others, this may be a brand new experience. With respect to offering applause throughout the course of the concert, we would ask that you reserve it for the completion of an entire work. So for example, if you look at the program and you see the second item on the program is a chorale partita, that is a set of several variations all based on the same melody. We would ask that you not applaud after every individual one, but you let the whole piece be performed and then offer your applause of appreciation following the completion of that entire work. We will show the organist performing via a camera and the televisions that we have put on either side of the front of the church sanctuary. However, we certainly will not look at you funny if you decide to turn around when our recitalist is speaking or playing and you want to look up toward the balcony. You're certainly welcome to do that. That will not be considered bad concert decorum here this afternoon. After our recital is completed, we invite you to stay with us and join us in the church lobby. We will have snacks and refreshments following the concert, and we would certainly welcome some time to converse with you and enjoy some friendship and fellowship after the recital has been completed. Finally, I would also like to bring to your attention that in the back of today's program, you will see information about another concert that's coming up next month here at St. Mark's. The choir from Martin Luther College will be on tour in California, and they will be singing here at St. Mark's on the day after Palm Sunday, or the day before Palm Sunday, Saturday the 19th of March at 6:30 p.m., and we certainly would invite you to return for that concert as well. Finally, there, as you noted, there is no admission charge for this concert, but if you would be so kind as to support our concert series and the expenses related to this recital by leaving a free will offering in the plates as you exit the church this afternoon, we would certainly appreciate those donations as helping us to continue this concert series. With those thoughts and notes, we would like to begin our concert and welcome to our recitalist who comes from the Seattle area. Please welcome Mr. David Krewal.
Thank you. Can you hear me downstairs? Is it on? You can hear me? Okay. Thank you all for coming out this afternoon. I'd like to say a few words about each of the pieces, because not everybody's familiar with the organ, repertoire, and with what the composers were trying to do. And this first piece was written by Johann Sebastian Bach in 1731. It comes from one of his cantatas. A cantata at the time was about a 30-minute service by the choir. It had an introductory piece, sometimes brilliant like that, sometimes maybe during Lent it would be much more somber. And then they would have the choir sing, they would have soloists sing, it would finish with a chorale or a hymn. This particular cantata, most of the cantatas, he wrote 200 of them, and they were all generally intended for a particular Sunday. This one, though, was written on the occasion of what they called the Ratswechsel, the changing of the town council. And that was important to Bach, not because of his joy at an election being over, which all of you could probably appreciate, but it was because these were his employers, the town council. And it was a chance for him. He knew that his employers would be in the audience. They were sort of obligated to show up for their first day of work. And this was his chance to show them that music was flourishing under his direction and that he was a competent composer. You can imagine if you were in their shoes hearing something like this played by Bach and his orchestra, and then another 20 or 30 minutes of beautiful music probably set you up for being happy to do that kind of work. So that was the first piece. He did perform that two more times, about 10 years and 15 years later. The second piece is, as Pastor Stray mentioned at the beginning, a chorale partita. The chorale is a Lutheran hymn, and a partita is just a name for a set of variations. This particular hymn, Sei gegrüßet Jesu gütig, I put the words in the program so you have some idea what it is. It's a Lenten hymn. It's no longer in our hymnals. I should talk to somebody about getting it back in. Pastor Stray happens to be on the next hymnal committee. It's a very beautiful hymn. I think maybe it dropped out of the English hymnals because there's, or didn't make it into the English hymnal from the German because there's no really good translation. Although the translation I put in the program, I hope is sufficient to give you an idea what it is. It begins with a statement of the chorale, and then there are 11 variations. And you'll know the last variation when it comes because it's big and loud. There's nothing on the organ that isn't being used. It's a five-voice statement of that chorale. And the general theme, just to give you a preview of it so you know what to listen for, it's three notes up and three notes down. Three more notes up, three notes down. That's how the chorale begins. You'll hear that frequently. You'll hear parts of that strewn throughout. Even sometimes in the accompaniment, it's very hidden, maybe, like the beginning of the first variation. That germ of three notes going up is in there. And the ornamented chorales, they try to hide that melody, so your job as the listener is to try and pick it out. In general, the theme is easy to hear. It's in the melody. It's in the soprano line. Sometimes it's in the pedal. I hope you enjoy it. It's a beautiful piece.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, Bach was 21 when he wrote that. It's not bad for a youngster. But the funny thing about Bach is that his reputation and the memory of him sort of fell into a lapse for about 40 or 50 years after his death. People considered his music to be too esoteric or too mathematical, maybe, compared to the classical period. Our next composer, Felix Mendelssohn, is really responsible for the renewal of interest in Bach. Mendelssohn discovered a number of the cantatas that were just laying in the basement of the Thomaskirche in Leipzig and began a series of concerts to play these cantatas. And he and other early Romantic composers were very interested in emulating Bach and learning what they could from him. And we'll hear more about that with Schumann when we get to that, but for the moment, let's talk about the Mendelssohn. This is his sixth organ sonata, next on the program. It's actually in three movements. The first movement is also a theme and variation, and the theme is a familiar hymn to many. It's the Vater Unser, Our Father in Heaven. It's Luther's hymn on the Lord's Prayer, and it comes to us from Luther's hand himself, that melody, and has been in our hymnals, unlike Zeige Grüße, it has kept in our hymnals to this day. It's very easy memory to, or easy melody to remember. I guess I would like to say something about the fugue. So the first movement, okay, let me just backtrack and summarize the piece structure. Three movements. First is a theme and variations. You know, it's like 4 or 5 minutes long, some soft parts, and then it finishes with a very sort of pianistic arpeggiated section, marked Allegro vivace, but it's a mean sound. It's got a lot of bite in it, and it's funny because Mendelssohn and Schumann are both known more for their piano and orchestral works, not so much for their organ works. Mendelssohn only wrote these six sonatas and sort of a handful of other accompanying pieces, and Schumann wrote even less for organ. But this is a theme and variations on that, followed by a fugue, also on the same tune. It's a little bit hard to pick out, so I'm going to help by playing the theme on the piano and showing you what he does with the fugue. You know, this, I don't know if this thing is going to reach. Maybe it will. I have to unwind it. So the theme of that chorale, Pater Unser, and what he does for the fugue is, he changes the rhythmic arrangement of the notes, and it changes the quality. You might not even recognize it if I hadn't played that for you, and I hope that you do recognize it when it comes along. That's the second movement, the fugue, and the final movement is a very soft, suddenly a major key, a sort of a soothing, a nightcap sort of for the strenuous and energetic variations in the fugue that goes before it. So my registrant was supposed to be setting some of the presets. The organ here, I don't know if you know much about organs, not everybody is an organist, but it's different from a piano. The piano, you just play the key. You know, if you press harder, it comes out louder. If you press softer, it's softer. The organ isn't like that. You have to select the stops that you want from each of the keyboards. And the variations of Zeige Grüße, it just used up the whole resources of the organ, all of its memories. The memory levels allow me to make registrations quickly. So my registrant here, my talented registrant, also an organist, if there's any mistakes in the next thing, it's going to be his fault. He has just set up my presets for me, so we'll see if he got them right.
Thank you.
So I realize I used some terms last time describing the Mendelssohn and saying fugue and other special, you know, secret handshake keywords that only organists seem to know. The next piece by Schumann is a fugue. A fugue is a name for a piece that's organized in a way where one voice enters with a theme. It's called the subject. And another voice follows with that same subject after the first statement of it, after you hear the full first subject, a second one comes in, and then a third one comes in, and then a fourth one comes in. And if you're Bach, maybe you can get up to six. He wrote some six-voice fugues. You can imagine how difficult it is to make everything sound interesting and correct because it's not only the subject that has to be considered, it's also the counter-subject. It's what the subject does when the second voice comes in that's of interest. And Bach was the pinnacle of all fugue writers. I don't think anybody would argue that. Everybody since him has written fugues trying to either learn from the master or invent a fugue in some sort of new genre, because Bach completely exhausted the Baroque fugue. He wrote so many. I suppose if he lived, he could write more, but he was the only guy who was so ingenious that he could keep writing these very interesting, maybe, you know, mathematical fugues is the way you might hear them. Now Schumann, he's a romantic composer, and so when he writes a fugue, it sounds like a romantic composer doing it. It's like you have two preachers preaching on the same text, and neither of them sounds exactly the same. They might deliver the same message, but their voice inflections are different, their points might be different, and yet it's somehow the same text. And what Schumann chose for his fugue subject, the main idea, is the name of Bach, B-A-C-H. Now, how can you do that? The good thing is he's German, and the Germans have a trick. Instead of naming their keys A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and then starting with A again, those of you who know piano, you know those are the only letters. You don't have an H on the keyboard. There's just A through G, and then you start with A again. But in the German arrangement of things, the B is a B flat. So A, this is what they call B. It's our B flat. And H is the B natural. And actually, if you know musical notation, the flat sign, it looks like a lowercase b, that's the b that the Germans are talking about. And the natural sign that has a sort of a square edge, that's a letter h with a little bit of a trailer on it. And that's where those symbols came from, the soft and the hard, dur and moll, and the b and the h. So anyway, what does B-A-C-H sound like? Well, B is B-flat, A, C, and B-natural. It's those four notes. And frankly, those are not a very fortunate set of four notes to have to build a fugue on. Because they're so chromatic and they're so close together, it was hard for composers to really wrench a lot out of that fugue subject and make it interesting. But what Schumann did, he wrote six fugues on B-A-C-H. I'm just playing the first one. What he did to get out of this is he goes backwards. So it goes, hold on a second. He has a little bit of extra material in the middle. I have to get my music out. Ooh. I would have had this music up anyway. Yes, so let me give it a little bit more juice. Sticks in two more notes, and that's the end of B, A, C, H. So this is his subject and his counter-subject, B, A, C, H, H, C, A, B, and then the next one comes in. And he'll do that over and over again. He has a little bit of other material, but I won't go into it. You'll hear that as I play it. And it's a very a romantic composition, in the, I mean by that from the Romantic period. You'll hear as he gets toward the end, he builds it up, and he can't resist all those beautiful diminished chords, and he has just a gorgeous ending. Thank you. Today is Valentine's Day. I found out from someone other than my wife. And so I put a piece in the program. It's not exactly a Valentine's poem, but it is about God's love for us. The King of Love, My Shepherd is. It's hymn 375, I believe, in the hymnal, if you'd like to look at the words while I play. The hymn, of course, talks about Christ's love for us, which is the inspiration and the pattern of our love for our spouses and our family and those who have gone before us to heaven. I'd ask that you don't applaud after this one. I just don't feel like taking it for something that I'm really dedicating to my wife, the people I love, and for you and your loved ones too. Well, there's been a lot of German music on the program today. The final piece by Charles-Marie Widor is a French piece. You might wonder what they were doing in France while Bach and Mendelssohn and Schumann were busy in Germany and Austria. And the truth is that in France, organ music was going through a sort of a lull. The French classic composers in the early 1700s had done a lot for church music, but somehow it diffused into sort of an entertainment in worship. You know, the organists, someone wrote that the organists were like pianists gone astray. They were playing waltzes, galops, polkas. They would play things with like percussion sounds, you know, thunder. It was like a show, a circus going on in the organ loft, during a service. And this all came to sort of an abrupt halt in the mid-1800s with the movement of sort of spearheaded by Vidor and an organ builder named Caballé Cole. They began developing music whose ideal was the sound of an orchestra. And Caballé Cole solved some mechanical problems that were holding organists back. Of course, everything back then, nothing was electrified. You had to have people who would walk on steps or pump something to pump air into the bellows. And the organist had to not only recruit those people, but he had to fight the weight of the instrument. The more manuals and the more pipes you coupled on, the heavier the action got. You kind of had to be a Arnold Schwarzenegger with triceps to play a full organ for very long. And Caballé Cole solved that problem by using a pneumatic device called a Barker lever. And so you would press one key, it would let air into a box, and it would assist you in pulling down all the weight of the other keys. And so the organ became as light to touch as maybe a piano would be. But you could still have all the sound, and so you had a mechanical leverage. They hadn't solved the problem of the electricity for the blowers. That wasn't going to happen until the early 1900s. But it did make a lot of work for the town drunks who were recruited to go pump the organs on Sunday morning. And that was common. I am sort of joking, but it's just funny. But that's where they got their manpower from. And this piece, the Toccata from Vidor's Fifth Organ Symphony, of course the other movements are beautiful, but for some reason this Toccata has become Vidor's signature. It's his most famous movement of the most famous piece he wrote. I don't know what he thought while he was writing his sixth and subsequent organ symphonies when everybody's asking him, could you just please play the Toccata from the Fifth? But that's what I'm going to do today. It's full of life and vigor, and I wish the same for you. I want to thank St. Mark's for inviting me to come down here at the worship committee. It's a treat for me to play. It's a treat for me to come and play for you. It's inspiring to me. Of course, I enjoy the music, but I hope you have too. Thank you.
greetings from the balcony. Thanks for coming. Stick around it for a while if you'd like. Come again soon. Thank you.